prepackaged Star Wars characters still in their display box? Why, it's Luke. And Obi-Wan. And my favorite, Chewie. They're all here!
I bet my Wookiee!
TheForce.net and RebelScum.com present the Weekly Forcecast. And now your hosts, Jason and Pete.
We would be honored if you would join us.
And welcome back to the Forcecast, your weekly dose of Star Wars, the official podcast for TheForce.net and RebelScum.com. This week's episode for September 29th, 2006 is brought to you by Official Picks. For official Star Wars pictures and autographs, check them out at officialpicks.com. That's picks with an X.com. Don't forget, they just announced their 30th anniversary character archive set. They've already announced the first 12 photos, and you'll get a bonus 13th photo for free if you buy the whole set for $29.99, or if you want, you can buy them individually for $2.99 each. Again, this is the 5x7 30th anniversary character archive set. They've also announced a collection protection program, kicking things off with a pre-order for the first officially licensed three-ring photo binder with 30th anniversary artwork for only $24.99. All that can be yours at officialpicks.com, officialpicks.com. And some birthday news this week.
That's right. Everyone here at the Forcecast would like to wish a happy birthday to Mark Hamill, who turned 55 this week.
Wow, 55. Happy birthday, Mark. And we also wanted to draw your attention to the Rebel Scum forums for the Forcecast. Check it out at threads.rebelscum.com. Let us know how we're doing. We're going to pose some questions to you as well, like one little controversy that came up between Pete and I this week.
Yes, the Wizards of the Coast miniatures. Where should we talk about that? Should we talk about it in gaming? Should we talk about it in collecting? We're not real sure. We have a little debate going between us, so we need you to solve that for us.
Yeah, we already have a couple of responses over there at the forum. It's neck and neck as of right now.
Yes, one vote each, as it were. So we need a few more votes to really stem the tide. So please drop by there, let us know what you think, and keep an eye out for more questions as we go on.
It's also going to be a great place for us to put a sneak peek of what's coming up and maybe some trivia questions here and there for a certain promotion that you'll be hearing more about at the end of this week's show. We got a full boat for you this week, including part two of our interview with Star Wars artist Joe Caroni. He'll be in the cantina with us once again. So let's punch it.
I have good news for you, my lord.
That's good news.
Come closer, I have good news.
And we're going to kick off our headlines this week with the Jedi Master himself, George Lucas, who's a little bit of everywhere in the last couple of weeks. It was just announced recently that he was going to be, or is scheduled to be, the 2007 Rose Bowl Parade Grand Marshal. And the quote by Tournament of Roses President Paul Holman, I think, really sums up George Lucas. And at the risk of sounding like a fanboy here, I am going to say I think it's a great description. He talks about the challenge was finding an individual who, quote, embodied the same attributes that are part of the Tournament of Roses, bringing people together through entertainment, check, innovation, check, technology, check, but mostly a spirit of permanence, something that links generation to generation, and someone who brings joy to young and old alike. So I think that that's an excellent description of him, and of all places coming out of the Tournament of Roses president.
I think that wraps it up as succinctly as you possibly can about what George Lucas means to not only us as fans, but also to our generation and generations to come.
Absolutely. I think that he really is our generation's Walt Disney in a lot of ways. And funny I should say that. Walt Disney was once a Grand Marshal of the Tournament of Roses Parade himself. And George is in a lot of illustrious company, including Kermit the Frog, William Shatner, Frank Sinatra, and Star Wars composer himself, John Williams. So now, there's also going to be two Star Wars floats in the parade, and George kind of joked in the article saying, I'm sure that me being the Grand Marshal has nothing to do with my two floats being in the parade, which I actually kind of liked. It just kind of showed, yeah, you know, yeah, I'm a rich guy, I got a couple of floats, and yeah, guess what? I'm the Grand Marshal. It's just the way it is, folks. I kind of like that. It's just totally honest. But the two floats is part of the 2007 theme, Our Good Nature, will be an Ewok Endor-inspired float, as well as a float inspired by the planet of Naboo. So look for it on TV this New Year's Day. It's going to be a great kickoff for the 30th anniversary, and that's really what this is about, is getting right out of the gate, New Year's Day, kind of letting the world know, guess what? There's a party this year.
Yeah,
we're turning 30.
I'm sure there won't be a lack of mentions during the parade of this being the 30th anniversary or what this year means to everybody here. I'm sure the announcers of the parade will have a lot to say about that as his float goes by and he gives the queen wave.
Yeah, he said he was working on his wave, actually, in the article. Now, he wasn't waving at Starbucks, apparently. One of the readers of the Force.net, Aaron, who was working at a Starbucks at the Fashion Mall at the Strip in Las Vegas, and said he looked up, and it was kind of busy, and who did he see standing in front of him but George Lucas himself. And he said it was really tough because clearly George wasn't in the mood to be recognized or be, you know, spoken to as, wow, you're George Lucas. Jeez, I can't believe you're standing in front of me.
This is super sweet. Do you want a latte? That'd be awesome if I can make your latte.
But anyway, Aaron thought it was pretty cool, and it was a chance of a lifetime, so he sent it in to Force.net. We're really happy that he did, because it's a cool little story. Now, what's he doing in Vegas? That was the question posed. What's he not doing in Vegas? The man has $3.6 billion. He's single. The kids are all pretty much grown up or growing up. What's he not doing in Las Vegas?
I'm going to say one thing I know he wasn't doing was sitting at an airport dropping nickels into the slots.
Speaking of George's money, the Forbes billionaire list came out this week, and it was revealed that he is placed number 70 on the list, again, worth $3.6 billion. The article brilliantly points out that the $800 million worldwide haul of the Revenge of the Sith, oh, I almost said it. Did you hear that?
You did.
Almost said Revenge of the Sith. Might have had something to do with that. He's up to 3.6, folks. We rounded up to $4 billion this guy's worth. I kind of feel like some of that's my money. Actually, I feel like a lot of that is my money.
I'm sure at least some of it is
my whole basement
tickling
is that
in there,
money.
Yeah.
You know, he does spread it around. He is a philanthropist, and he really believes in his alma mater, USC. He donated $175 million. $175 million to the film school at USC. They could probably name the whole university after this guy, after that. I mean, that's a huge gift, which I think is actually really great because he knows that that's where the future of his industry is coming out of.
And after months of speculation, Steve Sansweet has finally announced that July 13th through 15th, Celebration Europe will be descending on London's Earl's Court Exhibition Theatre for 3 days. The celebration will be a mirror of the Celebration 4 that will be happening in Los Angeles, but will also have a unique European blend to it as well. Keep your eyes peeled to CelebrationEurope.com for all the information on tickets, event guest lists, and prizes, and everything else that's going to be associated with it.
Well, that's great. They're actually getting their own celebration. So we don't have to hear it anymore from you folks over there in Europe.
Well, and last week we talked about collector mania and how I was trying not to be jealous. But, you know, now I can be a little bit jealous about the fact that they're getting a celebration and they're having collector mania. And this is going to be a huge Star Wars party, just like it is here in the States. It's going to be huge for them. The one thing that I can say that I'm going to be a little bit disappointed in is that with Celebration being over there now, as well as in L.A., there's going to be probably a lot less European people that make it over to L.A. for C4.
Yeah, I was thinking that myself. I hope that it doesn't dilute the celebrity pool by saying, well, you know, I'm just going to go to the one across the street, essentially, you know, rather than across the pond, as they say. But I'm sure with the 30th anniversary, they're going to pull something out of the hat. And I've got my own theories about what I think we're actually going to see on stage for the first time in a long time. We had some disagreements about that a day or two ago.
You know,
I don't want to say it yet because it's a little premature, but I have very, very high hopes for the celebrity pool at the Celebration 4.
I think you may be looking at the long end of the celebrity rainbow for that one.
And there was an interesting story on the hyperspace, the paid side of StarWars.com, featuring an interview with Tom Derby, owner of the collectible investment brokerage in Norcross, Georgia. I guess what they call it is the toy industry's Merrill Lynch. Now, Tom was giving some advice to toy collectors, but this obviously was geared towards Star Wars toy collectors. And he says, focus on the rarest and the highest grade items, and you can probably expect that they'll continue to rise in value. He cited three items in particular that are increasing in value and or holding their value very steadily. One is a full Darth Vader costume. If it was used on screen, on camera, you can expect to fetch anywhere between $300,000 and $400,000 for that. That's not too bad.
No.
The complete set of 9 Boba Fett figures, vintage, covering all stages of the prototype, $185,000. Now, if you have the rocket-firing Boba Fett, which that's... There's been some controversy about that, about whether it really existed and, you know, to what extent did it exist. But according to this article, there's only one in existence. This is the rocket-firing Boba Fett on a card, $50,000. So.
You know what always upset me about that?
What's that?
Is that they didn't do that because there was some concern about someone losing an eye. You know, the old, you're shoot your eye out.
What, you know what
theory.
It was, actually?
What's that?
They had a similar mechanism on a Battlestar Galactica toy that apparently a kid died from this thing. I just totally shot what you were about to say down, didn't
no,
I?
No, no. You know, but that really just kind of, you know, that little bit of a somber thought.
I know what you're
there.
Saying. I know what I you're just, saying. You're like, it's one kid. Come on. Right. I want my rocket-firing Boba Fett.
Right. Well, but eventually what ended up happening was then they corrected it or something, and when I was into G.I. Joe in the later stages of my life, when the dearth in
Last
Star
week.
Wars figures... Yeah, well, yeah, yesterday, when the dearth of Star Wars figures was coming out, every single G.I. Joe figure had a rocket-firing mechanism on their gun. Now, even if all they carried was a pistol, they added in an accessory that they had to wear on their head that shot a firing rocket 350 feet down the street. And it drove me crazy because, just give me the real weapon. I can pretend that it shoots somebody else. I don't need it to actually spring load and fire at Cobra Commander.
Well, apparently, circa 1977, 1978, they did think that you needed a real rocket to shoot out a Boba Fett.
Well, and that would have been cool because it's Boba Fett.
Right. Well, actually, my brother and I, we kind of had our own version. We would, I'm sad to say, tape firecrackers to the back of our Star Wars action figures, and, well, you can just imagine.
Oh, the humanity. The Star Wars Where Science Meets Imagination exhibit will be opening at the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry beginning October 11th through January 1st. At this time, they are sending out an open request for volunteers to help out with the exhibit, and you can check out omsi.edu for more details on doing that, as well as information on tickets.
Well, you and I were there for the opening night at COSI in Columbus. And do you remember Darth Segway?
I do remember Darth Segway. And if I have one request out there...
He could be listening to this show.
He could be. To people who are out there that are going to volunteer, a fabric cape and khakis and a white t-shirt does not make a Jedi costume, okay? If you're going to dress up, please do your best to actually make a nice costume. I'm not afraid to admit that my mom made me a costume even as I was an adult, and it was really cool. And it was more than just a cape that I tied around my neck and a Force FX lightsaber.
But at any rate, you folks in Oregon are in for a real treat because it is a very cool exhibit, particularly if you haven't seen the other exhibits where they bring out the props and the costumes. This one is a little bit lighter on sheer number of costumes than the one that was floating around before. The name of that one is escaping me, but I went and saw it in Dayton about 4 or 5 years ago, and it was fantastic. And this one's great, too. This is very good if you've got kids because they have a lot of interactive games that are kind of teaching the kids about the technology that's being utilized in the films. As a matter of fact, speaking of which, if you go to myspace.com/isitPeteNatel or is
yes,
it Peter Natel?
It is Peter Natel.
Peter Natel. You will see a picture of Pete riding the, I guess, real-world equivalent of the land speeder that they had set up there.
Yes.
You weren't doing real well with that.
No. In fact, the picture was snapped just before I rammed it into the side of the wall that was sitting there. And I happened to look up at the same time and see that I was being filmed from by the local Columbus affiliate of whatever TV station. And
oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
If this doesn't end up on YouTube tomorrow morning, I don't know what is. So luckily, I didn't have any celebrity at that point. So nobody really cared that I was on there. They just went, oh, look at that jerk on this on the little hover chair.
I don't even think people care now.
Yeah, that's true.
And some news for our friends in British Columbia. The British Columbia Lions Society for Children with Disabilities are going to benefit from the Spirit Bears that were created for the Kermode Spirit Bears in the City Public Art Project. The project comes to a close later this month, where the life-sized 7-foot fiberglass sculptures will be auctioned live and online. Check it out at gobid.ca. Absentee bids will be accepted for the live auction. Included in this lineup, if you're wondering why is this a Star Wars story, is Fonzbear, Batbear, and of course Darth Bear, all three of these by artist Judson Beaumont. The Great Spirit Bear Auction and Gala will take place at the Westin Bayshore Resort and Marina in Vancouver Tuesday, October 10th. You can check out all the details at spiritbearsinthecity.com. This actually sounds kind of strange, kind of goofy, but it's a great cause. I read up on it a little bit online, and Darth Bear is very cool. In fact, so is Fonzbear. They're all very cool. They're enormous, 7 feet tall. I mean, I don't know where you're going to put this.
Well, and I'm sure that this is something I was looking at. When I first looked at it, I thought, oh, this would be a great gift for my mom, who was a bear collector. Then I read that it was 7 foot tall and thought, maybe that's probably going to be on the $50 that I want to spend. But I will say that I guarantee if I gave it to her, she would find somewhere to put it because she has a very keen knack for doing that.
Your mom's a hardcore bear collector, isn't she?
Hardcore. My old bedroom no longer exists as it once was. It is an entire bear room, and it's to the point where she has to rotate them based on the season because she has so many. I mean, it's...
Wow. So if you walk in now, it's like... It's fall bears.
Yes, yes. It's back to school bears. It's Halloween bears, you know, with the on deck bears being the Thanksgiving bears.
And my question is, was your bed even cold by the time she had jacked it out of there and thrown her bears in?
No. In fact, you know, that was the tear that rolled down my face as I walked out. You know, she just kind of covered everything up that was in there. But that was just because she felt so bad about me not being there anymore that she had to replace my old room with something.
Sure.
October 23rd through the 29th will mark Wizards of the Coast online convention, UnCon. The convention will feature interviews with game designers, online demonstrations, contests, prizes, and much more. Visit www.wizards.com for more information.
So this is an online convention. That's kind of neat.
Completely online. They'll have different updates daily, and it'll be mostly taking place in forums and through their website and everything. It seems like a really cool idea. I'll be interested to see how it works out.
Are there any big Star Wars announcements coming up in that show?
They will have a lot more information on the Bounty Hunters line that was just released, plus the
For the miniatures game,
plus the spaceship battles portion of the miniatures game, which they're going to be releasing pretty soon, which is going to be exclusively starships, which they hadn't done prior to that. So,
oh, that's cool. You know, the one thing about an online convention that you're just not going to be able to translate?
The costumes.
I was thinking that third day smell that you start to get.
Yes. That's... I could probably translate it sitting on my couch, but...
And as always, you can check out links to all the stories that we talked about at our show notes at theforce.net and rebelscum.com.
And we'll step back into the cantina for part two of our interview with Star Wars artist Joe Garrone.
Where are you going, Master?
For a drink.
Sorry about the mess.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy. We must be cautious.
Now, the transition between doing the role-playing work and then actually getting into the comics, how did that start? How did your relationship with Dark Horse begin?
Well, basically, I had to send samples again, you know, to Dark Horse. It took a while. I'd done some stuff after the role-playing game for Wizards of the Coast. I'd done some stuff for them. That actually led into doing stuff for Lucasfilm directly. I started doing artwork for HoloNetNews.com, which was a which was a website that episode two that Lucasfilm.
And it's still up, by the way. So
yeah, I know.
Log on and check it out. It's still there.
Yeah, they archived it. But going from Wizards of the Coast, I went into Holonet News like right after that and worked with the Lucas Online team at StarWars.com, and we developed that. And that was just before episode two. So I had done some work for them directly, and then I went from there into Star Wars Insider. So I basically established myself with Star Wars Insider, and from there I kind of went to Dark Horse at that point. I had done a bunch of stuff for Insider and some, you know, all the role-playing game stuff at that point.
As a matter of fact, I think if my research is correct, you've had art in every issue of Insider since 66?
Not every issue.
There are a few gaps, but 66, yeah. The most current issue, 89, you've had something in there, and nearly everyone.
Almost everyone. I think I've had a lot of back-to-back issues, and then sometimes two or three issues will go by, and I don't have an assignment. So I would love it if I had work every issue, actually. But I know it seems that way, but I guess over the past 3 years, I mean, yeah, I've done a lot for Star Wars Insider, definitely. I'm still hoping to do even more for them. I love working with those guys, so I've got, you know, maybe a couple other projects hopefully lined up with them. I went from Star Wars Insider, and actually I was doing stuff for some other comic publishers at that time too, and that also kind of, I guess, helped me establish myself as a comic book artist, which led to the Dark Horse stuff. So,
okay.
I mean, I'd done some stuff for like other comic publishers like Marvel and stuff like that. So,
well, it's interesting what you were saying is that your relationship kind of developed with Lucasfilm as a result of the work that you did for the role playing game, and that actually came first before you got to work with Dark Horse. Is that right?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So, what kind of exposure did you have to the folks at Lucasfilm when you were doing the role playing work? Were they, were you submitting your work to, you know, Wizards and West End, and then they had to get approval from Lucasfilm, or were you actually working directly with Lucasfilm at some points?
Well, with publishers like Wizards of the Coast or Dark Horse, you're really working with the in-house editors, and they get, you know, approval on everything, and then once they sign off on the artwork, it gets sent into the licensing department at Lucasfilm. And usually there's the licensing editors or the art directors at Lucasfilm. Then they basically, you know, they look at the artwork and then they approve it, send it back to Dark Horse, or, you know, they let, you know, Wizards or Dark Horse know that, you know, it looks great, whatever. And then at that point,
is that every piece
published.
Of work, Joe?
Pretty much. I mean, I think the way they send it, the editors and the publishers are really the ones that have more contact with Lucasfilm than, say, the artists. I mean, the only time I really have direct contact with Lucasfilm is when I'm, you know, if I'm working on, when I did the stuff for Holonet News, or when I did the artwork for Celebration 3. I mean, that was all through Lucasfilm directly, and I'm, you know, I'm on the phone with them. But usually, I mean, the publisher, you do the artwork for the publishers, and they'll send in the pages in probably batches, I'm sure.
Right.
Or they'll send in all the little illustrations together once the deadline has been met.
Are they
the licensing editor will just look at everything and kind of sign off on it. So
are they particularly tough? I mean, where they say, you know what, that Stormtrooper helmet, it's just not right. The little line goes right here. Are they
not really? Actually, I mean, Lucasfilm is they're great to work for, and you know, people like Dark Horse and Wizards of the Coast, I mean, they're really cool to work with. As long as you have a good handle on the material, and you have respect, I think, for the property, and, you know, I think I've never really had any approval issues, because I love Star Wars so much. I love drawing it. I put a lot of effort into it, so I try to.
Well, that shows. That definitely.
Oh, thank you. I guess. You know, I personally, I've never had any approval problems with Lucasfilm or really any of my various editors I've worked for. But I mean, I think that might be because I do a lot of research and I put a lot of effort into my work. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know how it is for other artists, but I think Lucasfilm as a whole and the publishers that they hire to for their licenses to produce these books and stuff. I mean, I think everyone's got a a kind of a good gauge for and a good respect for, you know, for the right kind of material. So,
mm-hmm. Does it get easier as you build a reputation? You think
easier? I don't know. I don't think it ever gets easier. I mean, I'm still having to, when I'm not putting my foot in my mouth over something, I'm usually having to prove myself.
You're only as good as your last piece, right?
Exactly, and that's true for any kind of art job in any company. But I mean, in this business, and it's not just because it's Star Wars, because it's such a big franchise, but in this business, I mean, you're always having to prove yourself, and you're always having to do your best work and turn it in on time, and it can be tough, and it's not easy, but it's fun, and if you love it, then it's easier. But yeah, I mean, it can be tricky. I mean, I'm always trying to impress the next editor and do my best work that I can, I guess.
Hey, Joe. You talked a lot about doing your research. If any of our fans out there haven't gone and read the Insider Magazine, which was the Art of the Underworld, if they haven't read that, there's a great write-up that you did about that. Talk a little bit about what you did and what you use as reference points in the research that you do, because the artwork is absolutely outstanding, and there's so many little nuances that I'm sure you can't go over. I mean, definitely read the article if you haven't read it. Kind of go into a little bit about that and some of the characters that you actually came up with. To throw into that artwork,
it's easier with my assignments for Star Wars Insider when I work from photo reference more, because I have a little bit more time built into the schedule, so I can go and I can shoot actual friends in their costumes, or I can email them and have them send me pictures of them in various poses that I can translate into my artwork.
You just call up some of the guys at the 501st and have them send you some photos.
Yeah, basically. I mean, I do a lot of conventions, and I have been for like the past 10 years or so. So, I mean, I've made a lot of friends in the 501st and the Rebel Legion, and so I know all the people with the really cool costumes. So it's one of the perks of being a Star Wars artist. So, you get to hang out with these guys, you get to admire their work, and you get to play with the costumes and the weaponry. And I mean, I'm just a big Star Wars geek anyway, so I enjoy that, but. I make friends with these guys, and we keep in touch. And if I have an assignment that comes up where I need to draw Boba Fett or Darth Vader, I know some of the people I can email or contact and say, hey, can we set up a photo shoot? Can I get some photos from you and the costume? And that's kind of how, for Star Wars Insider, I'm able to do that more often, like I said, because there's more time for a little bit more time for those projects. But when I'm drawing the comic books or stuff, there's usually a tighter deadline, so I can't really shoot my own photo reference as much as I like. But with Insider 89, the latest issue, there was an article called Underworld, which featured, which was written by Abel Pena and Ryan Kaufman, by the way, and they wrote an amazing article, and those guys are fabulous Star Wars authors. But I love working with those guys. So they wrote a great article, and I was able to basically work with some characters, some of my favorite characters, like the bounty hunters. I took some photo reference for the project myself, and adapted that reference into my artwork, and was able to create some fun Star Wars scenes for that project. So some of the characters were like Boba Fett or Boosh and I don't know, Zuckus and, characters like that. And I got to work with my own expanded universe character, Kai Justice, who is actually a friend of mine, who I've been illustrating him as a Jedi in various Star Wars projects for the past 3 or 4 years now. Or so.
How cool to be your friend.
Yeah.
You get to be a Jedi.
Well, I don't know.
I'm actually looking at a picture of Kai Justice right now.
Okay.
How long, this is based on a buddy of yours?
Yeah. It's my friend Justin Chung. He's actually another Star Wars artist. He just recently broke into doing Star Wars art about a year ago for the Star Wars sketch cards for Tops. Mm-hmm. But he's actually the webmaster of my website, joecaroni.com, and he's a good buddy of mine. We work together on projects from time to time, and a few years ago I needed to illustrate a Jedi character, and he was a big Star Wars fan, and he's a prop builder. He'll cobble together all the spare parts that they actually used to make lightsabers and Star Wars blasters and stuff like that.
Wow.
So he was building his own props and his own Star Wars costumes, and I needed to illustrate a Jedi for a role-playing game assignment, and I was like, hey, Justin, you'd be perfect. Let me draw you as a Jedi, you know, put on your Jedi robes, get out your lightsaber, and I'll work you into the scene. And it ended up, the piece turned out pretty cool, and so I ended up wanting to illustrate him more often. And over the past couple years, I've been able to kind of include him in various scenes and Star Wars Insider and, you know, the role-playing game books. And even my friend Jan Dersma, even, because she's a friend of Justin's also, we're all pretty close. And Jan decided to draw Justin's character in one of the issues of the Star Wars comic books. It was Jedi Dooku, so Kai Justice shows up in there, and eventually the character just, you know, he took on a name and he took on a background and he took on a personality, and the more often that he started showing up, he kind of, you know, eventually became canon, which was really cool.
Cause wow.
I love my friends, and it was great to see, you know, one of my friends, you know, basically become a living, breathing Star Wars character.
That is too cool.
Yeah, that's pretty fun. So.
And tune in next week for the third and final installment of our Chat with Joe.
Hey, what are you trying to push on us?
A fine addition to my collection.
It's worth a lot to me.
And we'll kick off our collecting segment with some Hasbro news. The first wave of the 2007 30th anniversary figures were shown off in all their high-resolution glory. The first wave, consisting of 8 Revenge of the Sith-inspired figures, include the Galactic Marine, or the Clone Commander, whichever you want to call it, a super-articulated Mace Windu figure, R2-D2, which, as it's pointed on RebelScum.com, may be a possible repaint of the R4-G9 Episode 3 sneak preview figure, and it comes complete with a blast effect accessory. Obi-Wan Kenobi, slightly updated, based on the number 55 Episode 3 figure, but with his face looks a little bit different. I think they retooled the face, and there's some new accessories in there to kind of reflect his appearance on Utapau. The Mustafar Lava Miner, the brand new figure in the wave, gets plastic treatment finally. The Airborne Trooper, which is speculated to be a repaint from the Mace Windu Battle Pack, or was the Trooper from the Mace Windu Battle Pack a repaint of the Airborne Trooper? Who knows? We may never know. And the much-anticipated concept Stormtrooper, based on the Ralph McQuarrie art. Now, this is a retool. This was a fan choice. Actually, it was fan choice number 4 figure that was released a number of years ago. But this is going to kick off the Ralph McQuarrie Signature Series. There will be one in the first 8 waves of the 2007 line. So there's going to be 8 total Ralph McQuarrie figures. Unless they pull out, which you never know, we might get a convention exclusive or something to drive us insane. For those of you trying to collect all of these Ralph McQuarrie figures. The Super Battle Droid with new arms and some fire effect accessories will round out that first wave. Now, those figures, starting with the Galactic Marine, are numbered 2 through 9. The first figure is going to come with which is actually Darth Vader.
Of course it is. Of course it is. There's no other figure it could have been other than Darth Vader.
You know, I just don't understand. We just got off of Revenge of the Sith. We just got off of Greatest Battles, the Heroes and Villains, which were all repacks from, again, Revenge of the Sith. So to kick off the 2007 30th anniversary of the release of Star Wars A New Hope, 8 Revenge of the Sith figures. I'm baffled, folks. What can I say? I think the figures look great. The packaging looks outstanding. I know that there's some controversy out there about all of the corners that will be mutilated by targeted employees everywhere. But I, for one, think the art is just tremendous. I love the coins. I was a huge fan of the coins back in the original Power of the Force line, so I'm really happy to see them back. I hope that the line's not jumping the shark. I think there's been a number of lines that have, once they throw the coin in there, that's the end. But I don't think that's going to be the case here. I think they're going to do it right. What I was saying earlier about these being figures 2 through 9, the first figure is a Darth Vader. He's going to come with a 30th anniversary collector's coin album. It's a 6-panel album with a full-color outer mural to hold 60, get this, plus coins. Yeah, oh yeah, there's extra spaces for, you know, duplicate coins you might get. And, of course, exclusive coins. Chase coins. You know, when I first saw this, though, this reminded me of the the 50 state quarters thing my grandma bought me like 4 or 5 years ago. She said, now you can collect a quarter from every state. Tells me those are going to be a heck of a lot easier than collecting all 60 of these coins. Or, I'm sorry, 60 plus coins.
Right. Well, it was at least cheaper. 25 cents for a quarter as opposed to $7 for these figures. But figures, yep, do look great. But, you know, of course, it's with every wave, it's the best of figures, it's the worst of figures.
Right.
You know, I love the Galactica Marine. It looks outstanding. Then there's Obi-Wan, who's still got the spring action legs, which just make him look like he's, I don't know, almost inverted. Like,
yeah, we're gonna get a little squatted more into this. The Hasbro Q&A number 11 and number 12 had some very enlightening. I think Hasbro is really starting to open up, and we're gonna share some of those questions and the answers with you this week, because I think it sheds some light on where Hasbro's coming from. I don't know that we're ever gonna crack that case, but I still go back to the idea. It's the 30th anniversary of what? Of what?
A New Hope.
And we get repacks, in some cases, of Revenge of the Sith figures to kick things off.
Right. Well, you know, the Darth Vader could be a New Hope Darth Vader, or he could be Revenge of the Sith Darth Vader, or he could be Empire Strikes Back Vader, or Return of the Jedi Vader.
Actually, it's Revenge of the Sith Vader. It's even in the promo materials that's come out.
Can you tell?
Well, and I was checking out Entertainment Earth. They sent me a little notice about this wave being available for pre-order. And you're going to get two of every figure. Except.
Here it comes.
There's only going to be one Mustafar Lava Miner.
Of course.
And why would we want two in there? Because, you know, he's a repack. Oh, no, that's right. No, he's the only new, truly new figure in there. And only one Ralph McQuarrie concept Stormtrooper figure. Now, I know the idea out there is that this signature series is going to be special. It's going to be somewhat rare. But short packing these, I don't know. I got a bad feeling about it. And for you Galactic Hero collectors out there, there is a variant. The Sand Trooper that comes with the 2-pack with Obi-Wan. Apparently, there's two versions of this figure out. One with and without the black eyebrow strip on the helmet. So you have two date stamps out there. One is date stamped 61651. That is sans stripe. And then there's 61781, and that's with the stripe. The packaging remains the same, showing the eyebrowless trooper illustrated on the front and back. So variants have even invaded the Galactic Hero line.
What I want to know is what happened that he lost his eyebrows. Was it a bad grilling accident?
Maybe he caught whatever bug affected Sebastian Shaw, which fried off his eyebrows. And for those of you just looking for an excuse to spend some money on Star Wars this weekend, Toys R Us and Target both have sales going on. Now, the Target sale is probably only good through this Saturday, which for those of you listening, when we release the show on Friday, that would be tomorrow. We don't know if it's going to be extended. Typically, these promotions last from, you know, slippery ad. That's what we call them here in the Swank House. The slipperies. Can I have the slipperies? You know, the ads. They come in the Sunday paper. So I think this is going to be from ad to ad. So we're probably looking at maybe just one or two more days of this. The greatest battles and the heroes and villains, which are pictured up in the ad, but I have a feeling, from what I understand, it's more than just those that are on sale. I have to tell you, I don't really know because I'm not out hunting figures. As I've announced earlier on the show, I'm buying them a case at a time now. I'm not in the rat race, so you have to forgive me, folks, if I don't have all the details, but go to Target. It looks like they're $6 each. Now, whether that extends to the Saga line or just the heroes and villains and the greatest battles, I can't really say, but there's a number of sales going on at Target, so check that out. Also at Toys R Us and ToysRUs.com, buy two, get one free of many popular brands, including Star Wars items. This is for Jeffrey the Giraffe's birthday. The offer is good on most all Star Wars items, including big ones. So if you're looking to get a couple of AT-ATs maybe, or maybe a couple of the Dagobah X-Wings, now's the time. Sticking with Hasbro, we're going to turn the page to the weekly Q&A. Now, what these questions have been pulled from weeks 11 and 12, and it's very cool what Rebel Scum does. They go through and they pull out all the questions and then provide links to the answers from all the different sites that are participating in this. So I've pulled these specifically because I think they really do shed a little light and answer some questions. Now, we're not going to address the, when is this figure going to be made? And when is this figure going to be made? Because let's be honest, they don't tell us. I mean, there's very few occasions. I think with the super articulated Qui-Gon, we talked about that last week or the week before, they did actually just say, yes, we're making it. It's in 2007, so be quiet. But at any rate, they typically don't address questions like that, or they don't give you a straight answer. And they're really, really closed-mouthed about 2007. They really want, I think, this to be as much of a surprise, plus gearing up this for Toy Fair coming up at the end of the year. They're going to have some big announcements, I'm sure. So we don't want to steal their thunder. But this first question says, Hasbro revealed a few weeks ago that the 2007 line has been, quote, put to bed. Is the team hard at work on Clone Wars 3D toys, or did they get some downtime before the ramp-up? Hasbro's answer. Put to bed means that the ideation is done. I didn't even know that was a word. Ideation? Anyway. Put to bed means that the ideation is done and locked up, but execution is far from done for the back half. At any time, we are working on parts of 2 years' worth of product in differing stages. Fine-tuning spring 2007, input drawing and sculpting for fall 2007, and strategic direction and line planning for 2008. As reward for their hard work, we have given our team this Friday afternoon off as downtime. Note, Hasbro has year-round half-day Fridays, but the R&D team hasn't been officially informed yet. So what they're saying here is, obviously, they are really well over a year out, at least as far as the planning goes. So clearly, they know what's going on with the animated series. And clearly, if they're already planning for 2008, they're working on them right now. So that's kind of what I thought was interesting about that. I'm so desperate for anything about this series that this even was interesting to me, because it's just kind of neat to think about someone has probably got some art and they're sculpting these figures right now.
Right. There's some concept art. There's some photo or even an outline sketch that please just leak it onto the internet. We want to see it.
Yeah. I'm so desperate for some news or some photos. But at any rate, I'm guessing, and this is just total speculation from me, I think the reason that we saw the switchover from the Clone Wars Cartoon Network style figures to the realistic style is to build the bridge into this new line that we're going to see for the show. I mean, most of the speculation has been that the show is going to be a kind of a realistic computer animated version of the characters in the Clone Wars era. And so that's sort of my theory. I think that the reason that we saw like the battle pack with the Asajj Ventress and Anakin with the sleeves all ripped off and everything, rather than that have been in the animated style, it's because we're building this bridge into the new line. That's just my theory. I don't know. Maybe it's a crackpot theory, but hey, what can you say?
And as a follow-up to the recent announcement that the 6-inch Titanium Ultra series will be canceled, this question was posed. Why does Hasbro think the series failed? Was it the price point, the early offerings, general fan disinterest, or anything else? There are probably two main reasons, Hasbro said. The lack of differentiation from the lower-priced Titanium vehicles, and the limited scope of the offerings initially available, which did not cover the sense of collectability for the segment. Now, I have to agree with them, especially on the second part of it, that there just was not the offerings that people were looking for. You know, the Annette was a great part of the series, but that didn't come out until later. I know that the other day I was over at the Walmart, and in their clearance aisle, of course, there were five or six of the Tri-Droid Fighters that were, of course, on clearance. And I always thought that was an odd choice to put out with the line because it just wasn't that distinctive a vehicle. It's not one of the ones that people just associate with Star Wars. And I think that probably had something to do with why the line ultimately didn't work out.
Well, you know, I'm not a vehicle collector, so it's hard for me to relate on this story because it's not a line that was really all that important to me. But what I can say is that I know that as a figure collector, I get very frustrated when I see other properties, and Hasbro hasn't done it so much. I thought they were going to do it with Episode 1, because there was so much product for Episode 1. But you got the rusty, trusty 3 3/4 line. Okay, go ahead and add a 12-inch line if you want for the doll segment. But then they kind of got funky, and they had that like 5 or 6-inch line, and they just released a few figures out, you know, for it. And then they had that precursor line to the Unleashed, which, you know, they spun around in the little tube. It's just too much. And I think that's what happened with this line, is that, you know, they already had a popular line of vehicles with the titanium. And then they went, and, you know, well, this is ultra titanium. And it just, I think it was just more than the market could bear, obviously. And another follow-up to a question that was raised last week, we talked about the Mr. Potato Head 2-pack exclusive with the Darth Tater and the Spud Trooper that will be on sale at Walmart stores starting November 1st. And I had made the comment that, well, they would have had me if they would have combined all three and thrown in the R2 Potato. Well, guess what? The question was asked almost annually. Warehouse clubs like Costco have offered a really nice value-priced, value-added Star Wars toy set for their membership to purchase. Is there anything in the works for this year? And if so, can we get any details? Hasbro says, yes, there are two this year. Both will be at Costco. One is a 2-pack of electronic lightsabers with 2-pack-in 3 3/4 figures. No redeco, just a straight repack. Good to know. The other will be the Star Wars Tater Trio set, which comes with all three Star Wars Spuds in a cool, giant-sized Darth Tater outer package that serves as a container. Look for those in about a month. So, I'm getting my three. I'm very happy. I just got to find a Costco. And one of the most enlightening questions that I've seen in this Q&A so far, or I should say enlightening answers, after 100-plus basic figures in the 2006 line, 75 Saga, 13 Heroes and Villains, 14 Greatest Battles, a lot of collectors are feeling the budget pinch trying to keep up. Can you give us a ballpark estimate for the number of figures you're planning for 2007 so we can start planning our 2007 budgets now? The answer. And this is a long one, folks, but I think that it is definitely worth listening to. Well, you bring up an interesting point. We consider the loose, completest figure collector first and foremost when we decide how many figures we are going to do in the basic figure line. That is why the 26 Episode 3 Greatest Hits figures from this year, along with the UGG figures, were straight repacks so the loose collector could concentrate on the manageable core of the line. We are going with the 60 basic figures as such, plus the EU 2-packs for the new figure offerings in 2007. As for packaging collectors, well, this is the inherent complication. As demand for the line remains very high, we seek to find solutions for the market, especially in kid-appealing figures that will satisfy overall demand for more figures and help us ensure that we have the best overall mix at retail. Without introducing additional items like Greatest Hits this year, our need to keep up with demand would cause us to release even more collector figures like Poggle Lushros, or cause us to pull them out of the Saga assortment completely for whole waves at a time, which is not ideal either for the core collector. We are not trying to build as much product as the carded collector can absorb. We are very sensitive about keeping our collectors' bases, loose and carded, engaged in the brand, and that means striking a balance. But when demand continues to be very high, carded collectors do feel the pinch, largely due to the success of the line and the necessity of finding additional solutions to a what is otherwise a nice problem to have. Well, that's a very long answer, and somewhat unsatisfactory to me. This baffles me. We consider the loose, completest figure collector first and foremost when we decide how many figures we do in a straight basic figure line.
Wasn't it just last year that they told us that they consider the child market to be first and foremost and when they're doing their lines?
Yeah, I guess you could take that a couple different ways. I mean, here they're addressing the adult collector, although they do throw in a few notes about why they throw in the kid-friendly figures just to keep the figures on the shelves. I'm not really following their logic too well here, but I don't really hear the loose completist figure collector complaining much. It's guys like me, collectors like myself, that are the mint on mint card, you know, one of every figure collector. So, personally, I didn't even really look at the Greatest Battles or the Heroes and Villains figures. I looked past them. I basically considered them re-releases. Yeah, the art was nice, but that alone was not enough to make me rebuy 27 whole figures. The question was also raised about what are the demands, what are the expectations of a particular line, and how does that relate to whether or not it survives or it doesn't, like we talked about the Titanium Ultras just a minute ago. And Hasbro's answer is basically what you're talking about is the difference between a large toy company with a retail-based business model and a smaller company that has succeeded in creating a different business model. The, quote, boys' aisle space at major retailers is intensely competitive with a high standard for productivity and a relatively small amount of real estate. If a product line does not meet our or retailer expectations, it struggles, and the future of that line is in doubt no matter how much we like it or how passionately the fans are for that line. What fans have to realize is that even though they love something, a line that is struggling does not have as widespread support among fans, and that is tough to appreciate without understanding the larger retail landscape and the performance of each line. That is exactly why we chose to partner with Sideshow on the 12-inch line. We knew that we struggle at retail with 12-inch, but a small company that focuses a great deal of their efforts around this category can excel because they have a very different business model than we have. I guess I'm naive, and I'd love to sit down and pick someone's brain from Hasbro, but isn't that kind of like what we have the internet for?
You know, I understand where you're coming from on that, but I also kind of see where they're at. There's a lack of agility that comes with being such a large company. And I know I see it in places that I've worked for. And I just don't think that they have that capability as of yet to kind of really work into that and scale down what they do in order to meet some of the demands that would be good for our internet capabilities. We've already seen that they've struggled doing the one of every figure thing on the internet, even though they tried that. We've seen that they struggle doing their own offerings with HasbroToyShop.com. I mean, they don't really keep their stock as up to date as even the stores do.
Right.
Yet Sideshow has really got that niche down where they're able to do it and do it in a great way that really works for the collectors and really keeps demand on the line real high.
And the last question we're going to feature this week involves the George Lucas mail-away campaign from earlier this year. The question was posed, do you consider the mail-away premium George Lucas figure a successful campaign? What are the plans, if any, for future mail-away exclusive items? The answer, well, we like the idea of continuing to do promotions. The George Lucas Stormtrooper promo was certainly a success in showing retailers that we have ideas that get collectors excited and drive traffic to retail, and sell-through was very good overall. Retailers look forward to the next wave next year. There were two key learnings, though, that can inform our future plans. One, what did not succeed, and this is something we have to constantly work on, which was the requirements for the redemption. We should have anticipated that Scout Troopers, and to a lesser extent, Luke's and Tuskens, would be heavily picked regionally and disrupt the redemption model. Number two, it was something of a surprise, but the number of actual redemptions was smaller than we thought compared to the number of sets sold through. A lot of collectors have apparently chosen to keep their clamshells sealed, which means the number of George Lucas figures in circulation is going to be less than we originally anticipated and built for. This, though, is an unfortunate byproduct of having to heat seal the clamshells to prevent theft of the stickers. So despite all of that, we do plan another promotion next year, and hopefully it will be smooth with tweaks from our learnings. I really think that that's cool that they basically said, yeah, you know, this is not a perfect system, and we're well aware of the shortcomings of the promotion. I've really racked my brain on what is the answer. And as long as we have people that are willing to steal these redemptions, I don't really know what the answer is.
No, I don't think there is an easy answer that where you can continue to have the the clamshells closed shut, but then still have all the information that you need to do the redemption. I know we were lucky enough to get ones that had tape on the outside as opposed to the heat seal, but they were like the last set that went out because, again, people were stealing them. And I know I went to retail and saw that there were certain ones that had the redemption stickers missing, and that just drives me up a wall.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the human element is always going to, you know, make room for corruption of some sort. So, I mean, you're always going to have a problem when it comes to these exclusives.
You know, and it's that eBay profiteering.
So, I mean, really, I think what they're faced with is how do we respect the mint on card collector and at the same time offer some sort of a redemption program? And good luck.
Yes. And Sideshow had a major announcement recently as they announced the Militaries of Star Wars line for their 12-inch figures. Now, this line is going to consist of the Militaries of Star Wars, which is the troop builder portions of the figures, the Rebel pilots, the Stormtroopers, the Clone Troopers, and starting, very first off, the Endor Rebel soldiers, which will kick off the line in early 2007. Now, that is going to have three different Endor Rebel soldiers: the white beard, the brown beard, and the no beard Rebel soldiers. Those are soldiers, not pirates, that will be available 1 month apart in 2007 for $60 a piece.
You old pirate. Where to start with this?
I know you're not happy.
I just want to know, did like Hasbro and Sideshow trade places somehow? Did I fall asleep and all of a sudden the who was running the Star Wars line over at Hasbro is now running for Sideshow? Okay, let's chalk this up with the first wave for our 30th anniversary of A New Hope being Revenge of the Sith figures. Let's chalk this up. I can't think, and I'm probably going to offend some my fellow fans out there, and I apologize. If your favorite action figure as a kid was Endor Rebel Soldier, I apologize, but I can't think of a more boring figure to start this line off. I mean, I was really hoping it was some kind of, is it April Fool's? What's going on? Because I didn't buy it. When the photos leaked from The Insider last week, I was like, no, this can't be right. But $50 a pop for these figures. Now, granted, they look cool. They're very, very detailed, but man, Snorfest. You know, why would we do that over the Emperor's Royal Guard? Or why would we do that over even a Stormtrooper?
Yeah, I know when the actual website has the picture up there, and it's got a picture of all the Rebel pilots in the briefing room before the Death Star run, and it's got a picture of the Clone Wars scene from Attack of the Clones where they're all running at each other, and then we get Endor Rebel Soldier with white beard.
Exactly. I thought that was really funny because the art on the the art in the ad just did not match. It was a lot more exciting, let's put it that way, than the figures that were being announced. So, well, hey, if you're a big fan of the Endor Rebel Soldier at Christmas, well, I shouldn't say it's coming early, but at least for the pre-order, it's probably going to come early this year for you. Get them while they're
beardless. And in the We Aren't the Only Ones That Make Mistakes category, Sideshow has announced that it will have to make a correction to its Plo Koon figure, which is coming out next year. It was pictured with a green lightsaber, and in fact, he has a blue lightsaber, as shown in Attack of the Clones. The blue lightsaber is the one that will be included with the figure. However, the gauntlet, which is the concept lightsaber that is included with the Sideshow exclusive series, will continue to be green.
Once again, this proves that Star Wars fans are the best fact checkers in the galaxy.
And as a last minute reminder to those of you who are actually listening to the show on the day it's released, Friday, September 29th, Sideshow will have a priority pre-order up this afternoon for its Medicom's Real Action Hero Clone Trooper. TFN reader Sean East sent in an image of the replacement Luke Skywalker card from the Star Wars Evolution update set. This is the card that was mailed out to replace the autograph cards that were being disfigured at the bottom of the set. The replacement cards are numbered 1D on the back, so keep an eye out for those. I don't know the full story behind this, But apparently there were a lot of cards that were being damaged at the bottom of the set. What was odd to me is I looked at the image of the card, and it doesn't look like there's an autograph on it. So I don't know if these are being sent out as replacement of the actual card, or if it's an autograph card, or what the deal is. So if there's anyone out there who knows the answer to this, send us an email at podcast@theforce.net just to let us know what the deal is. And rounding out our collecting news for this week, the StarWars.com official site had an article this week about the DeAugustini miniatures. Now, these miniatures are the 1/32nd scale metal miniatures that are available bundled with the Spanish magazine Figuras del Palomo. There will be 60 figures in the set by the end of the 2007 run of the magazine, and none of the figures will be a repeat character, not even in a repeat outfit. So these are really nice, these are really cool looking, but sorry to everybody outside of Spain and outside of the production runs of this magazine. You're not going to be able to get them except for on eBay.
I really like these. I saw them, and I mean, this is the first time that I had ever known that they were in existence, and they really reminded me of the old vintage micro figures that I used to play with all the time. And I thought, wow, I might like to pick these up. And then I saw just how scarce they are, and I thought, I'll pass.
All the classic battles.
Delta Squad, execute door breach.
Any way you want.
We have all but destroyed the Jedi Knights.
Fight as a Jedi.
The Old Republic is crippled.
Fight in space.
Darth 3PO?
Ubisoft announced that it is in the process of developing a new title for the Nintendo DS and the Sony PSP for a December release. The game, entitled Lethal Alliance, will take place between episodes 3 and 4 and will follow the adventures of a female Twi'lek and her robot companion.
Well, this, according to the blurb in Star Wars Insider, this takes place, you say, between 3 and 4. And closer to 4 than it does 3, obviously, because I think one of the plot points here is that this is actually the theft of the Death Star plans.
Right. Or at least an attempt to. I don't think they wanted to give away the whole story
sure.
as of yet, but I'm fairly sure that that's part of what it is.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm sure that our good friend Jay will correct us if we're wrong here, but it looks like maybe another key plot point in the Star Wars saga is about to be revealed via this game.
Right, and you will also have the opportunity to run into several characters like Princess Leia, Boba Fett, and this week's EU Character of the Week, Kyle Katarn. And if you're still wavering on whether you're going to purchase Star Wars LEGO 2, the original trilogy game, check out the full review at TFN. Josh Griffin, Dustin Roberts, and Dustin's daughter, Jaina Roberts, all offer up their reviews of the game. Josh gives it an A+ and says it's one of the best games that Star Wars has ever put out. And Dustin and his daughter both give it a very enthusiastic 2 thumbs up.
I was once a Jedi Knight, the same as your father, before the dark times, before the Empire.
Always in motion is the future, beyond the Outer Rim.
Master Voss has moved his troops to Bos Plitti.
And turning the page to the expanded universe, we're going to kick things off with a spoiler alert. I repeat, we have a spoiler alert. If you are currently reading the Legacy series of novels, this is a spoiler alert. Okay, you have been warned. Publisher Del Rey has announced in the latest issue of the Star Wars Insider that they have a new promotion to name the next big Sith Lord in the Star Wars saga. Now, for those of you reading the Legacy series of novels and who have not stopped listening to this podcast or not fast-forwarding, you know that Jason Solo, son of Princess Leia and Han Solo, is turning to the dark side. Now, I am currently reading Betrayal right now and loving every minute of it. My biggest regret is that I just don't have more time to read. So I'm about halfway through, totally digging it. If you're out there and you've read Karen Travis's follow-up, Bloodlines, please let me know if it's worth reading. I tend to skip the paperbacks. No disrespect meant, but it's just, it's a big commitment. You know, reading a novel is not like, you know, picking up a comic every couple of weeks. It's a big commitment. So let me know if I need to read this one, because I'll definitely pick it up because I'm really digging it. But getting back to the major story here, a website, www.darthwho.com, is currently being set up. Now, right now, it's just a redirect to the Del Rey main site. But it's soon going to be part of this promotion where they're going to be asking fans to name Jason Solo as a Sith. And what is the Sith name going to be? So this is, I'm totally pumped about this because I think we might be able to get our listeners really involved in this. And who knows, maybe the Force cast might be the ones to name the next big Sith Lord. But more details as this promotion unfolds, but we wanted you to hear it first. I know that the Insider is just now starting to ship in the last couple of days, so maybe you haven't gotten to it yet. I'm really excited about this promotion. I think it's a great idea, really bringing the community into this.
That'll absolutely get the fans going, and my first vote goes out for Darth Pete. I think that would be fantastic.
Boy, nothing instills fear
across the universe like Darth Pete.
Play back the entire message.
What message?
Message, Arthur, the message.
The Emperor commands you to make contact with him. It's a trick. Send no reply.
And we're going to start our listener mail segment this week with your Star Wars tales. If you recall, last week we put the word out that we'd like to hear from you. We've had all kinds of great guests in our cantina so far, and they're telling us all their great Star Wars stories, and Pete and I have regaled you with a few of our own, but we want to hear yours. So, you did not disappoint. We got a few good ones in this week, and we're going to kick things off with Jared in Clearwater. Now, not only does Jared have a tale for us, but he's also got a correction, so we can file this under our errors and omissions file.
Hey guys, this is Jared from Clearwater. I just want to tell you, you have a great podcast and to keep up the good work. My Star Wars story is I was one of the few people to actually win the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire Star Wars edition at Star Wars Weekends at the MGM Studios in Orlando. Very recently, with Warwick Davis sitting right next to me. So it was a very neat experience. And I won a cruise for my trouble, which I'm taking with my wife in May. Also, I have to correct you. It is pronounced executor. It is not executor. There is no such word as executor. The word you would use for that is executioner. But according to the StarWars.com website, in the question and answer section, how is executor, the name of Darth Vader's Super Star Destroyer, pronounced? Answer, the word executor means the one who carries out or performs something, and is pronounced executor. The confusion over pronunciation often stems from the word executioner. So there you go. Thanks, guys. You got a great podcast. Keep it up.
Thank you, Jared. We appreciate that. Good story.
Yes, very good story. You know, it's always the faceless people that end up winning those types of contests. So I'm glad that we actually have a listener of ours that's out there winning.
That's right.
These
we actually know
weekends.
Somebody who won one of these. So congratulations. It sounds like you had a great time, and it sounds like you know your stuff, too. And I got to be honest. I mean, I'm surprised about that it is executor. It makes total sense now. You know, when you think of like being the executor of a will or something like that.
But obviously that's something that's been disputed several times since it made it onto the question and answers page. So
yeah, at StarWars.com, absolutely. So I don't feel too silly. And you didn't catch it.
I'm so sorry. And our next Star Wars tale comes from Alex in Oregon. My little Star Wars tale of getting a great deal on something Star Wars. I live in Oregon, specifically in the Portland metro area, and am thus close to Powell's Books. Being a fan of the D20 edition of the Star Wars role-playing game, I tended to look for books for that game when I came into Powell's. Much to my delight, one day at Powell's, I found that there was a copy of the Starships of the Galaxy source book for the game. I had been looking for this source book for a while, as playing as an independent, non-alliance or empire-affiliated campaign isn't quite the same when you can't make a few modifications to your ship like Han did to the Falcon. It wasn't until later that I learned that Starships of the Galaxy was regularly going for $200 used at Amazon.com and for slightly lower but still higher than I paid prices on eBay. So I was quite pleased with my bargain.
Oh, I bet you were. That's pretty cool, Alex. I like stories like that. And our final Star Wars tale for the week comes from Mick in Boca Raton, Florida. Mick says, My story is in regard to an opportunity I had this past May to meet Star Wars producer Rick McCallum at the Star Wars Weekends event at Disney's MGM Studios in Orlando. What makes the story cool, at least to me and other Star Wars fans, is that Disney required you to get a bracelet, which allowed you to wait in line for a meet and greet with the celebrity in attendance. My wife and I were not able to get a bracelet, as they were all out by 10 a.m. that morning. After our initial disappointment started to fade, we figured we could make our way over to Rick's tent to at least catch a glimpse of him. When we got there, we saw the line was wrapped around a corner of one of the studio backlot streets leading up to where Rick's tent was. However, there was a metal barricade like those at rock concerts directly in front of the table where Rick was sitting. The great thing about it was nobody was standing there, and the barricade was only about 10 feet from him. My wife, Julie, and I looked at each other and thought this might work out better than expected. We stood patiently for about 10 minutes on the other side of the 3-foot-high barricade as Rick spent time with each person who came up to him for pictures and autographs from the line we so highly coveted being in. Finally, after a few last pictures, Rick, along with two Disney security people, got up to leave. But as he stood up, we noticed he was heading right towards us to exit the area. I took a shot and said, "Hey, Rick, can we get a handshake?" He promptly answered, "Sure thing," and stopped to greet both my wife and myself. This prompted a swarm of people to rush in behind us, but I was not going to let anyone muscle their way past us. I knew this would be a day long remembered, and it would not be spoiled. We wound up chatting with him for almost 3 or 4 minutes about the Star Wars TV series, which he said would be, quote, very gritty, and stated that bounty hunters were definitely the premise. He joked with us after asking if we had any children by exclaiming he had 4 girls, which kept him on his toes constantly. Finally, I asked him if there was any chance George would do any more Star Wars movies, and Rick said, quote, no, he won't do it. He sounded pretty bummed out about it, too, so I asked him if he'd want to be involved if there were ever Star Wars movies to be made again, and he said, absolutely, no doubt. Before leaving, he posed for a picture with us. We shook hands one last time, and he was off. This was one of the best Star Wars experiences I ever had, and something I am happy to have the chance to share with you guys. Who knew we would have a chance to meet Rick McCallum by the pure luck of being in the right place at the right time? Rick was so friendly and so personable. We felt like we'd known him for years. Just a great guy, and a moment I'll never forget. I hope you have an opportunity to talk about everyone's stories on the podcast. And if you're ever in Florida during the month of May, be sure to visit the Star Wars Weekends event. It's worth the trip. Thanks so much, guys, for all you do to keep Star Wars fans informed and making us feel like Star Wars is in a galaxy not so far away. Well, that's a really cool email. I really appreciated that, Mick. Mick actually sent us a little picture of him and Rick. So it's Mick and Rick in that photo. And, you know, that's the impression that I get from everybody who's come across Rick McCallum, is that he's just the way he comes across on these video documentaries that we're so familiar seeing him in. And he's obviously shown up at a number of conventions and just as personable and as nice as you can be. Yeah. Really loves Star Wars.
Just one of the guys and just loves being a part of it. And a quick email from one of our fans in Denmark. I've only recently started listening to podcasts, and my favorite part of your show is the EU characters. I knew of Kir Kanos and Karnor Jax from the Crimson Empire series, but Quinlan Vos and Asajj Ventress were both rather unknown to me, except for a few lines about Ventress in the Clone Wars cartoon and a few of the clone novels like Dark Rendezvous and so on. Anyways, keep up the good work. LT in Denmark. It's amazing to me how far around the world we've already gotten feedback from, and we love hearing from people outside the U.S., and hopefully we'll pick up more and more fans as we go along.
That's very cool. So keep the emails coming. Send them to podcast@theforce.net, or you can give us a call on our Skype line, 330-871-4TFN. And again, we're looking for your Star Wars tales or just general feedback. And before we leave you this week, we wanted to bring your attention to a promotion we're kicking off for the month of October. Now, in the past, we've been asking that you vote for us over at podcastalley.com. Well, there was a little bit of a glitch. We're back to square one. Unfortunately, the information that podcastalley.com had on us was the old feed, the old show, and we just weren't able to get it updated, so we had to sort of start from scratch. So there's a new listing for us over there, and we're appropriately listed as The Force Cast. The easiest way to find our listing over at podcastalley.com is to check out our show notes, where there's a link provided that takes you right to our show's page over at Podcast Alley. You just click on that button to vote. They'll ask you for an email address, but we promise they don't spam you. It's just a way that they can guarantee that someone's not scamming the system. Now, you can vote every day, and here's what's in it for you. If by the end of October we are in the top 10, we're going to have 10 straight days in November of giveaways. Now, these giveaways will happen during the ForceCast. They'll be happening over at TFN, Force.net. They'll be happening at RebelScum.com, in our forums, maybe even a Skype cast. We don't know exactly how we're going to do it, but we're going to have 10 straight days of giveaways thanks to our good friends at Official Picks. They're going to be providing the prizes for us, and we just couldn't be more excited about this.
I think we can absolutely do it. I think with your help, we'll be in the top 10 by the end of October, and we're going to give away some really cool prizes.
So once again, vote for us throughout the month of October at PodcastAlley.com, and you can just click the link in our show notes. That's going to wrap things up for us this week. We want to thank our sponsor, Official Picks. Check them out for all your Star Wars autograph and photo needs at officialpicks.com. That's picks with an X.com. We'd also like to thank our good friend Joe Caroni. And please join us next week for the third and final installment of Joe's visit with us in the cantina. And don't forget, coming up next after Joe, Kyle Newman, the director of Fanboys, drops by.
And remember to send in your Star Wars tales to us. You can leave us a voicemail at our phone number, which is 330-871-4TFN, or send them via email to our address at podcast@theforce.net. And also be sure to check out our forums on rebelscum.com and let us know what you want to hear or check in on some of the other topics that we have posted there as well.
And we have our promotion for Podcast Alley for the month of October. We want to get in the top 10 by the end of the month, and we'll have 10 days of giveaways from Official Picks. More details to come, but follow the link on our show notes. Do it, and you won't be disappointed. We promise we'll make it worth your while. And you can always write a review for us on iTunes. That helps. Just keep listening.
And remember,
the Force will be with you, always.
This podcast is not endorsed by Lucasfilm Limited or 20th Century Fox and is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The official Star Wars site can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names and sounds of Star Wars characters, vehicles, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Lucasfilm Limited or their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of the Force.net LLC unless otherwise indicated.
Hi, Pete. Hi, Jason. Well, I got to tell you guys, I love the ForceCast. It is the coolest podcast about Star Wars that I've ever heard. I saw you guys had the 800 number, well, or the phone number today, and I had to call to tell you, wow, how cool I thought it was. Some of the pronunciations this week were a little off, guys. You know, you need to work on that. Maybe check, like, Wiki or something like that. But otherwise, this is awesome. I think it's so cool.